right. Can everyone hear us okay? No? Well, let's be quiet then. Then we can maybe hear. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I'm Kurt Schrader, one of the co-chairs. On my right is Representative Nolan, the other co-chair. Please don't blame the other people up here. What we're going to do is going to have a brief presentation of some of the parameters in the budget that have constrained our decision-making process, so you can understand some of the ways and means people have to work on this budget. And then we're also going to lay out some ground rules for the discussion here as we take down our screens. First thing I guess I'd lay out is that, again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I appreciate the turnout. This is really wonderful. And don't know if we're going to get to everybody, obviously, with a room packed like this and 2.5 hours timeline here. Committee, if you can hang in there for that long, I'd appreciate it. Oregon is in a bit of a budget dilemma. The needs exceed our revenues. And a particular dilemma with the governor's budget assuming more revenues than we currently have. This puts our budget process at a bit of a disadvantage. And we're going to need you to help us figure out how we get from where we are to where you want us to be. It's either choices within the budget process or revenues that we have not yet thought of or included in our budget that you want to tell us about. So as we go through this, hopefully you'll be able to help us. Our budget's mostly about restoring the cuts over the last few years. We're trying to build a budget that's balanced. The total funds budget is about $48 billion. Our basic general fund, lottery fund, that is more discretionary, comes from you taxpayers here in the state of Oregon, is about $15 billion. You can see on the screen there how it's divided up. Most of it going to education, about 55%. The next biggest chunk goes to our human services and then public safety. About 95% of our budget is in those top three categories. It's important to us to have a reasonable ending balance. We're making very certain that the disaster that hit us in 2001 is not repeated again, at least not to the same degree. So we're setting aside a little bit of money, as you can see from that screen. The other thing that's important to us is to build a sustainable budget. You see in this slide, we actually not only balance the budget for this session, but the next 2 years after that and 2 years after that. Now, we're due for another recession, I think, within that time frame, so it's going to be tough going. And our mantra and our budget has been to add some programs, build the base, but not overpromise to where we're cutting people off of services that we cannot afford. The next slide points out the dilemma we faced in this last 6 years. Senator Schrader, why can't you do stuff? You got a 20% increase in your budget. Geez, I'd love that in my household budget. Well, we had some pretty tough times, just like a lot of you did in this last 6 years. We cut about $1.5 billion out of our budget. This is the first biennium in 6 years to get back to where we were in 99-01. So there's not a lot of extra dollars flowing around, unless you want to rob Peter to pay Paul somewhere within our budget. We'll call out a couple of major initiatives that we're trying to accomplish. We've made a big investment in K-12 this time. That had been basically flat funded up until last session. We made an 18% budget allocation there, trying to emphasize young people prevention, get them the education so they don't need a lot of the services, either with our public safety friends or our human service friends later on. Big improvement. We also decided to make sure everyone had access to an education. Now, this town's known for a great education system, both at the local and university community college level. We're trying to make sure at least that the students have an affordable, accessible education. Every single Oregonian can afford an education under the shared responsibility model. We're also recognizing a lot of people have been left behind in the last few years. The recession has hit hard. Our mental health advocates, our seniors, now, some of the low-income friends of ours have pointed out we need to provide housing if we're going to have any long-term successful solutions for people when they get treatment. They need to have housing. We're also emphasizing prevention. Now, some of you here think we're not preventing enough, but again, with the limited dollars we have, we're trying to make sure that we have our safe highways, we're interdicting the meth, we're expanding our troopers, making sure that there's access to health care in a way we haven't had before. We've improved child provider care dramatically, making sure that, you know, young moms trying to get from welfare to work can do so. We've even recognized that our counties have been facing some big problems. It's not all about us at the state level. They provide and help us with a lot of our services. So with that Secure Rural Schools money being a great risk, our county partners being in a great peril, we're stepping up to the plate to make sure the schools are taken care of. We're providing a $50 million pot of money for matching funds for those counties that want to help themselves. We'll help them at the same time. We're making sure they're still getting their video lottery money, making sure the community corrections budget starts to build towards even a greater amount of money than they've had the past few years, and making sure that we take care of the veterans and a lot of the basic health services. The next few slides basically show very quickly where the money has been and where it's going. The first bar is where it was 2 years ago, or this past 2 years. You can see that black bar, or the dark purple bar, on the far right shows where the co-chair's budget is. In all cases, except for administration, I'm kind of proud of that, we're above what we spent 2 years ago, and we're above what the roll-up for inflation is. That's the middle bar. So when everyone comes to you crying that they're not getting any more money and there's big cuts, that's not true. That's not true. Generally, those program areas are getting more money than they had 2 years ago and above inflation. The next slide shows real quickly exactly what the distribution is. What are the percentage increases? We understand K-12 gets the big bucks, but what are the percentage increases? You can see while 18% of the money is going to K-12, as far as a percentage increase, it's not that great when you compare it to our economic development, human services, and natural resource areas. The other big piece we'll leave you with real quick is that we're trying to build this sustainable budget. Capital construction has been a big issue, and the point we're trying to leave you with here is this is the third best capital construction budget in Oregon's history. That little tiny bar in the far right looks small compared to a couple of the others there, but it's the third biggest in Oregon history. And every dollar in debt service means a teacher that's not hired and a professor that's not hired at one of the other institutions, or a worker that can't take care of our kids, or a police officer that can't get on the road. So we have to balance that. The last slide shows the actual debt service. Even with our tiny little block at the far right-hand side, our debt service increases next session. Last slides basically talk about the distribution. This you can read in your packet. We also have, believe it or not, some principles that we've operated under. I'd leave that for your perusal for later on. And the last slide summarizes our major investments that I outlined a few moments ago. So with the budget constraints, the revenue constraints we have, we tried to allocate the resources where we thought would be a good starting point for the discussion. The committee, the subcommittee chairs, the subcommittee members are eager to hear your input over the next 2.5 hours. As I said, we'll go for the next 2.5 hours. We probably won't get to everybody. I think part of this process is not just us listening to you, but you listening to each other. We're going to call people up probably four at a time. We're going to go using the list that you've signed in on, try and go pretty much in order. We're going to try and cover different program areas. If there's a group of people that you're representing, you want them to stand up when you come up to testify, please feel free to do so. That way, if we can't get to everyone in the audience, at least they'll have a chance to have been recognized, and we can show support for the program that you're talking about. Each person will get 2 minutes to talk. Unfortunately, it's not a lot, but we got a lot of people here. We want to hear from as many people as possible. So if you can keep to your 2 minutes, that'd be helpful. I think Representative Nolan's been kind enough to she'll hold up a yellow card at 30 seconds. Red card means stop, and Senator Schrader will have the unfortunate distinction of making you stop. So please help me look good. I'd appreciate it. With that, any other issues? Our local reps here, and Senator Sarah Gelser should be acknowledged, and Senator Morris should also be acknowledged. Andy, far right-hand side. Yes. They're your power brokers here in the Ways and Means process. All right, with that, let's start up. We'll start with J.J. Quinlivan, Carl Schreck, Dr. George Bowler, and Dee Davis. Please come forward. And then on deck, getting ready to go, will be David Altashine. I apologize for bad pronunciation. Rick Jacobson, Greg Perry, and Annabelle Jaramillo. Jaramillo. I know Annabelle, too. That's pretty bad. Please start right off. And we'll take written testimony. If you want to drop written testimony off, we don't get to everybody. Please make sure we get your written testimony. We'll make sure it gets to every member of your full Ways and Means Committee.
Hello, Committee Chair. both of you, committee chairman and chairwoman, and members of the committee. My name is J.J. Quinlevin, and I'm the Associated Student Government President at Lynn Benton Community College. My address is 2923 Northeast Glacier Way, Corvallis, Oregon, 97330 for the record. And I'd like to talk to you today about community colleges, specifically Lynn Benton Community College. 3,700. That's the number of students right now that cannot get into science classes at Lynn Benton Community College because we have a limited number of science labs, and those science labs are 33 years old. We have 48 seats total for our biology lab. Our chemistry lab right now can only take 18 students simply because the lab is 33 years old. When you do an experiment, basically you start it at your desk, and then you have to actually take it over to the corner of the room for the measuring equipment that cannot fit on the desk, and then you have to go into a closet on the other side of the hallway in order to enter it into computer because the computers cannot fit in the room. We have hundreds of students, as I said, 3,700, that cannot take biology classes. A friend of mine is one of those students. He's a former Hewlett-Packard employee that got laid off, and he got financial aid from community colleges, but he cannot. He's about to lose that financial aid because he simply can't get into the science classes that he needs. Another friend of mine is a her husband got laid off from his job, lost his job, and she wanted to become a nurse, and she had to wait an entire year to get into the nursing program because of the limited number of science labs. Now, Lynn Benton Community College is asking for $3.75 million. That is a match that we want specifically to build a new science building. We have $1.2 million right now raised so far of that match, and we're going to lose half of it if we can't get that money. Now, I know how important K-12 and higher education is, but you know, community college students are from the local area. They're taxpayers. They're going to get jobs and get higher paying jobs to pay income from the local area. And we're asking you to fund the full $529 million and the community college capital projects for our area and for all community colleges. Thank you.
Very good testimony. Thank you. We probably don't want to clap too much because that would mean less people get to testify. You know, we appreciate the enthusiasm. That's very good. I don't want to stifle that, but we can get through more people. We found at these other hearings if we just keep rolling along. Please, sir.
Good evening, chairs and committee. My name is Carl Schreck, and I live at 3060 Northwest Seneca Place in Corvallis. And I'm a handful of senior scientists with the U.S. Geological Survey Biological Resources Division. I also represent the Oregon Cooperative Fish and Wildlife Research Unit, but I'm actually here testifying for myself. I've spent about 35 years studying aquatic resources and fishes in Oregon, and it's come to my attention, and I'm sure to many of yours as well, that having a viable monitoring program has been very, very important for Oregon in terms of making wise decisions relative to the federal listing of salmon, particularly those associated with the Oregon coast. If it wasn't for such an extensive monitoring program that you have been able to support in the past, Oregon would have been in a much worse situation in terms of the cost and efficiency of making wise choices relative to salmon recovery. I would encourage you to think about the future and the need for such an extensive monitoring program that serves Oregonians, not just presently, but for decades to come. Without having something to compare to, there's no way of knowing if something has changed. That would mean there's no way of assessing the effects of mitigation measures, no way of knowing if recovery measures are working. There's no way of doing adaptive management. And unfortunately, there's also then no way of knowing if the ecological interests of people are being met, thinking about sustained development and growth for Oregon in the future. The last thought that I would leave you with is that an educated public can make wise decisions, and those wise decisions go all the way through the school systems, including higher education. Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you. You can stay there for a minute. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. My name is George Bollard. I'm a professor at Oregon State University and director of the Hatfield Marine Science Center in Newport. I'm here tonight speaking as a private citizen on behalf of the budget for capital construction for the community college system. As you know, Oregon State University is a leader in working in dual degree programs with the community colleges, allowing students to register both at OSU and at community college, allowing many economically disadvantaged students to enroll in college and to transparently move into Oregon State for their final 2 years. At Hatfield, we're quite pleased to participate with Oregon Coast Community College in this endeavor. We have a cooperative agreement with them and with the Oregon Coast Aquarium in an aquarium science program that has been a real hallmark program at the coast, supported by the National Science Foundation, and now one that has actually evolved onto its own without funding from the federal government. It's proven to be a very popular discipline, with many students getting degrees and moving on to jobs throughout the aquaculture and aquarium industry. It's become so successful that we're at the point at the Hatfield Marine Science Center where fully 40% of the student credit hours offered there are Oregon Coast Community College courses. This program has grown beyond expectations. There are presently plans for Oregon Coast Community College to build an aquarium science and marine science building on the campus of the Hatfield Marine Science Center, which will promote further collaboration between our programs. It will allow us to bring in new federal funding and is also very consistent with the need for developing these programs that will help us better serve the needs of the ocean industries and the ocean science that we plan to develop there at the coast. This is consistent with the economic development plans for our region as well, and it's something that, we feel very strongly will be a positive boost to the coastal economy. In closing, I urge you to support the investments in the community college capital construction system. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon or evening. My name is David Davis. I live at 1720 Northwest Menlo Drive in Corvallis, Oregon. I'm here primarily to speak specifically to a project which is called the Bioeconomy Sustainable Technology Signature Research Lab, which is a signature research project by the higher ed department to attempt to fund and support sustainable technology innovation within the higher education system, such that, in my view, industry and universities can join forces and resources to develop innovative economic development opportunities in sustainable technologies. As you know, the Oregon Business Plan has a strong pillar in looking at sustainability as being an important part of the Oregon's economic future. Part of the difficult task that you folks face in this budget process is somewhat affected by the vigor of Oregon's economy. If we have higher growth opportunities, we have more revenues, and your job becomes easier. I, as founder and CEO of a company called Sustainable Industries Group, am actively involved in that on a daily basis. Our mission is to research, develop, and commercialize sustainable technologies. One of the projects that we are currently involved in with Oregon State University Forest Research Lab involves taking waste carpet and wood waste and converting it into a composite lumber that has the strength approaching hardwood. This could double the market space of a composite lumber, which is currently about an $8 billion industry nationally. So these are the kinds of opportunities that I see that could be supported with this BEST program, and I just would like to speak in support of that.
Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, let's get the next group up, David, Rick, Greg, and Annabelle. Then we'll have on deck Tim Josie, Judy Wilson, Megan Cowie, and Frank Moore. Hi, Annabelle. Sorry about that earlier.
We'll take you through phonetics lesson on the
Yeah, I'm going to need that.
How do you want us to go?
Okay. Let's go right ahead.
Co-Chair Nolan, Co-Chair Schrader, members of the committee, welcome to Baton County. On behalf of my fellow county commissioners, Linda Modrell and Jay Dixon, who are also in the room, I welcome you to Baton County. There will be others speaking on some shared county services this evening, so I'm not going to address that. But I did kind of want a little bit to remind you about some other areas of the budget that I think are very important at the county level, and that's ensuring that there's a spending authority level for federal dollars for several programs, and these are in the human services area, but also in the natural resource area, because those help us leverage dollars at the local level. And since I grew up in small agency land and state government, I'm really going to kind of focus on the small agency type thing. And what I'd like to talk to you about tonight is the Oregon Solutions work that's done out of Portland State University. Oregon Solutions helped Benton County to engage with a diverse team of 17 partners, including several local landowners in the Marys River Watershed Council, the U.S. Forest Service, BLM, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Department of Forestry, Defenders of Wildlife, the Wren Community Club, the Nature Conservancy, and the Green Belt Land Trust, among others. And you can see this was a very diverse group, which helped coordinate a landscape-scale conservation plan. It also helped us in Benton County's Habitat Conservation Plan, which is through a grant through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Landowners in Wren, approximately 30, were willing to have their properties assessed for endangered, threatened, and rare species associated with the HCP, mainly because of the trust that was developed during the convening of the Oregon Solutions Project and some partnerships we built before that. With funding from the 2007 legislature, Oregon Solutions can help 50 other communities across the state to efficiently solve at local issues, whether it's air quality, renewable energy, sustainable development, or land management. Oregon Solutions provides a natural forum to engage diverse stakeholders to take action. I first became somewhat enamored with Oregon Solutions and looked at it as a possible model for developing a Benton Solutions strategy, which is what we're now working on. So I thank you for allowing me the time to talk about that tonight.
Thanks, Adam.
Good evening, Co-Chair Nolan, Co-Chair Schrader. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Dave Adelsheim. I'm a member of the Oregon Wine Board, a semi-independent state agency, and, of course, I have a winery and vineyard of my own. I'm here tonight to speak following on the testimony that I gave in front of the Education Subcommittee at PSU about a month ago to chat tonight about something called the OSU Wine Institute. This is a proposal that has come out of 3 years of work between the College of Ag Sciences, the chairs of the Department of Enology, Food Science and Horticulture, working together with the Oregon Wine Board to come up with a new paradigm to do research and extension work on grapes and wine in Oregon. As you know, the importance of the wine industry now reaches $1.4 billion in terms of total contribution to the economy. There's also a level of pride and honor, in a sense, that Oregonians feel in having this industry as part of the economy. We believe it's time now to allow our educational institution that does research for us to catch up with the industry, to bring together the aspects of winemaking and grape growing into one institute that sits over or at least next to the various departments and can coordinate the range of research that goes on within those departments, but beyond, and even beyond OSU. This really would become a magnet for that kind of research. The other important piece is extension. People with appointments as both doing research and extension are a critical piece. The last point I need to make is that the governor had $1.2 million in his budget, which has been, of course, taken away. We need that $1.2 for 5.5 FTEs to staff this. That becomes a partner with OSU's contribution of 4 people. And an important new piece, $2 million that the industry has raised out of its own money to fund the director of the institute. Thanks for the time and allowing me to go over.
Very good. Rick, go ahead.
I can see I have to speak very fast.
Sorry.
For the record, my name is Rick Jacobson. I'm the recently retired president and CEO of NORPAC Foods. I'm here tonight on behalf of NORPAC, its members, and its current president, George Smith, to request your support of the budget request for the Oregon Sustainable Agricultural Resource Center, OSARC. It's an Oregon Solutions collaboration that's contained in the certification budget request of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. $749,000 of that ODA budget component is included to create and manage the OSARC program. You'll have my written testimony, so I'm not going to go into details on the program. But just as a little background, NORPAC, as you may know, embarked upon a sustainability initiative that was developed by the task force made up of NORPAC members working in collaboration with the Institute of National Natural Resources, OSU, ODA, and Food Alliance. This effort is in response to changing market conditions in which customers want to know what's being grown, who's growing it, what's on it, what's the impact on the environment. And that's true of public policy also. Farmers in the processing industry are responding. However, the learning curve is high and the available expertise is not easily accessible, nor are the appropriate resources easily identified. OSARC fills what I consider the missing link for the farmer. It is designed to be a clearinghouse for information, expertise, and resources that already exist. It leverages the knowledge the industry has available in a readily accessible format. I'm not going to try to be an expert on public finance. That's you folks' job. But I'd like to share a little perspective as a past president of NORPAC Foods. We experienced some very difficult economic times. That's part of the cycle of the industry that we're in. We also were rewarded with some very successful economic times. And my point here is that during the challenging times, we continued to reinvest in those businesses and processes that we had in place. In my opinion, the same holds true as it applies to OSARC. The Governor's Oregon Solutions Program, the INR, all of these are leveraging existing processes and programs that can shape the success of our industry and the state's economy. I encourage you to support the budget request for OSARC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chairs and committee members, my name is Greg Perry. I am a professor of agriculture and resource economics at Oregon State University, and am here tonight as a private citizen. To speak specifically about the three statewide initiative, the $15 million package proposed by the Forest Lab, the Extension Service, and the Experiment Station. The policy option package has a number of very worthwhile proposals that you ought to give serious consideration to. I'm going to speak to just one of those, and that's dealing with biofuels. There are a number of good reasons why Oregonians ought to be interested in biofuels. Every time we go to the gas station, we get reminded of those. The gas price currently is about $3 a gallon. That's about 50% higher than it was 3 years ago. Aside from that, though, there are a number of other benefits: environmental, community development. What was my other one? Anyway, lots of benefits. There are lots of economic issues at the root of these, and so this package of biofuels researchers includes an economist. There are a lot of questions that could be answered. What is the cost of producing alternative fuels? What raw materials do we have? Can we produce all the biofuels that are produced in the United States? Are there certain ones that we're better able and better equipped because of our resources to produce? These and many other questions can be answered with positions such as these. The particular economist position is a combination of extension and research experiment station so that they work on the economics and extend that to the public. So I urge you to support that as well as the package as a whole. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you, gentlemen, ladies. Thank you very much.
All right, let's get Tim, Judy, Megan, and Frank up, and then on deck we'll have Rebecca Hartwig, Karen Miller, Tom Genie, and Joanne Miller. Please start right up. Tim? Someone?
Well, good evening, Chair. My name is Tim Josie. I'm a Tillamook County Commissioner. Tillamook County is known as the land of cheese, trees, and ocean breeze, and unfortunately, it's also known for its flooding. And ever since I became a County Commissioner, I have spent a lot of time working on flooding issues, and we've gone a long ways towards erasing some of the flooding issues that we've had. And the list of things that I could talk about would go a long ways, but we're still not there. We spent 3 years working with the Corps of Engineers to develop a feasibility study. When we got all done, we actually identified a project that would restore some marshlands and also reduce flooding. It's a great project. Corps of Engineers entered Cortina and Iraq and ran out of money, and we're at a stalemate. Senator Betsy Johnson came to our relief. And she mentioned Oregon Solutions, and I'll mention that one of the network sponsors is Samuel S. Johnson Foundation. And so, anyway, you know a lot about the Oregon Solutions. It's a great program. We've actually partnered with them. They're doing some assessments, but when that stage is finished, we actually need to have them come to town and help us work through some very knotty issues. And so I recommend that that you fund the Oregon Solutions at the governor's recommended budget at $1.5 million.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening, Chair. Co-Chair Nolan, Co-Chair Schrader, and members of the committee. My name is Frank Moore. I am the Public Health Administrator and Mental Health Director for Linn County. Prior to that, I worked for Deschutes County as the Mental Health Director. I want to commend particularly the interim leadership and the legislature and state leadership and the work they've done on the Oregon State Hospital Plan. I think that we've come a long ways. I started out my career working at the Oregon State Hospital. I guess my plea tonight is to look for community mental health program funding at a local level. I think it's a great master plan, but if you don't fund the local community mental health programs, you will not keep people out of the state hospital. You will continue to have tragedies with law enforcement and people within jails. And I don't think I need to tell any of you about that. There's been enough media about it. We could have CIT training for law enforcement people. And my hopes would be there would be a response in the community to law enforcement 24 hours a day, 7 days a week upon request. For the other few minutes, I'm going to focus on public health. Public health in the state of Oregon has not kept pace with the growth of the state. We are currently 48th in the United States when it comes to childhood immunizations, and we struggle daily just to meet the core needs with respect to drinking water quality, et cetera. So another plea, at least at that point, is to look closely at the local public health funding budgets. My budget within Linn County is 34% county general funds, which obviously are risk when it comes to the federal forest dollar reductions.
Thank you very much, sir.
Chair Nolan, Chair Schrader, members of the committee, my name is Megan Cahay. I'm here to tell you about the impact that community mental health has had on my life. I've had over 100 hospitalizations for psychiatric problems. I've had various shock treatments. I've been in seclusion rooms. I've had physical restraints. But for the past 8 years, I've been in recovery, and now I'm working as a peer advocate, giving something back, and it feels awfully good. And the community mental health has been with me through this recovery every step of the way. And I want to tell you that they've been with me with psychiatric problems. They've helped me with basic living skills. They've walked me through the labyrinth of Social Security, and they've been there for a lot more. When there were budget cuts, temporarily I had to be seen in the emergency room, and I can tell you that is not cost effective. But my life is a testimony to the cost effectiveness of community mental health. Now, you're going to build a hospital for hundreds of millions of dollars in 2011. We need cost effective treatment in 2007. I'm talking for the consumers of mental health. We need something now. And this is a cost-effective way. It's based on transformation of mental health. I owe my life to the Community Mental Health Service. My life is much better now. I'm grateful for it. Thank you very much for this chance to tell you about how great my life is now. Thank you.
Thank you. Good job. Good job.
Good job.
We have a great band of advocates here for mental health services tonight. I don't know if they stood up when we came up here or not, but if they didn't, I'd like for them to stand. Okay. Thank you very much, Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, and our Joint Ways and Means Committee from our legislature. It's wonderful to be here tonight and to have you in Corvallis. That is great. My husband and I, Virgil Wilson, are the co-presidents of NAMI Mid-Valley. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And we are here tonight to also talk to you about what Megan has said about the need for community mental health services. Without those, building hospitals is just something we cannot keep up with in our state. We must have the mental health services, the old term continuum of care, where we have the state hospital, acute care units, group homes. Supported housing is extremely important for this population of people. So we must have all of these things in our communities in order for people to live safely and securely while they are working on their recovery issues. We want to thank you for and applaud you for moving on something that has been long overdue in our state, and that is our state hospital. My grandmother was there back in 1940, and we, as a little girl, I used to wave to her in the window. And so we've been a long time with this building. We do thank you for what you are doing there. But we must fund services in the community, including alcohol and drug treatment, because over half of the people with mental illness also have substance abuse issues, many of them trying to just medicate when they don't have medicines or don't know what to do. We have a son, Bruce, who was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia at the age of 18. And after being homeless, hungry, out in and out of jails many times, hospitalized 30 times.
I'm going to ask you to have to finish up. I'm sorry, Ms. Wilson. Have to finish up.
Okay, I will. So community mental health services are important. They are cost-effective, and we do need them in our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good job. All right, let's get Rebecca, Karen, Tom, and Joanne up, and then we have Diana Zing on deck, Jim Tierney on deck, Bill Wagner on deck, and Tom Clancy Burns on deck.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, Chair Committee. My name is Rebecca Hartwig. I'm here representing the 4-H program in Benton County. I'd just like to inform you a little bit about what the 4-H program has done for me and what the 4-H program is doing currently right now in Benton County. 4-H reaches the diverse Benton County community by developing youth and adult leadership while enhancing self-esteem through a variety of fun, challenging, educational, and creative experiences. Currently, right now, in Benton County, we have started some 5-year goals for Benton County 4-H members. Some of these goals have been strengthen adult leadership, create a welcoming environment in Benton County 4-H, develop life skills in youth, develop and increase community service 4-Hers, develop job and career skills in youth. 4-H project areas include home economics, animal science, natural resources, expressive arts, personal development, horticulture, engineering, technology, and the 4-H Adventures program, 8th through 3rd grade. I'd like to start out just telling you a little bit about what the 4-H program has done for me. As a 4-H member, I've been in 4-H for 8 years. I started when I was in 4th grade, and I was a very immature, I had low self-esteem, my responsibility level was way low, and after I entered the 4-H program, my self-confidence went so far. It was amazing. It truly challenged me to take on leadership roles and take on the duty of a good citizen through my 4-H activities that I have done. Currently, right now, I just recently went back to Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Georgia, and spoke for the 4-H program. There are over, one of the things I included, there are over 2,500 youth involved in the 4-H program that includes clubs, schools, and communities. There are also 200 volunteers, and that is what makes 4-H such a great program. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca.
I'm Tom Janay. I'm here in Corvallis. I'm an architect with 40 years' experience. 30 years of that experience has been with CH2M Hill. I'm here to speak in support of the BEST proposal and my own personal feelings that both bioresearch, biomimicry, and sustainability are critical parts of our future, and I think it's an incredible opportunity for Oregon to build a group that's dealing with these issues. For those of you that have been down on the waterfront, there are two new high-rise buildings going in on the waterfront. Both of those, I believe, will be LEED certified. I'm the architect on the one that's on the riverfront side, and it will be certified by LEED. I'm a LEED accredited professional and have been for about 5 years. During the last year, I spent 7 months in Sri Lanka as a design manager on 9 vocational schools. 2 of those will be LEED certified. I also led a LEED study trip to India. So sustainability is something that's happening right here in Corvallis and all around the world. And I think it's an incredibly important part of our future. I personally believe that learning how to live within the balance of both the environmental, the economic, and the social issues, and finding that balance is the biggest challenge we have for this century. It's also the biggest opportunity. So one of the most interesting and influential books to me over the last 5 years has been Biomimicry by Janine Binyas. And her thesis there is that the answers for how we can live are within natural systems, and a large part of that is the biology end of natural systems. And so I think this wedding, this combination, is absolutely essential. I did bring a reprint of an article, cover story from Engineering News Record, March 12th of this year. It's on Sustainable Powerhouse, and it talks about CH2M Hill, which is an Oregon-originated firm 60 years ago. And I will give this to whoever is taking recordings in my card. And if any of you would like copies of this, I would be glad to get them to you.
Very good. Thank you
very much. I urge you to fully support the $3 million request by BEST for establishing this bioeconomic sustainable technology program.
Very good. Thank you.
Good evening, Chair Schrader and Representative Nolan. I'm here in support of the Oregon Commission on Children and Families budget, SB 5504, the budget bill. And I have some materials that I brought. And in particular, I'm here as a member of the Benton County Commission Board and also as a League of Women Voters representative. And the League of Women Voters has a study on homeless youth that I'm going to be passing around to everyone. And also, we have a position that we advocate from. So I'm distributing this along with a letter to you. And the letter is addressed to Kurt Schrader, but it should also be addressed to Representative Nolan. So excuse me for that.
Who is a member of the League of Women Voters.
Yes, I know. I'm very sorry. I should have known to check. So you may have seen this already. And I think I did pass it out to several other members, but I know all of you haven't seen it. And at this point, we feel like the homeless youth do need some funding. And there was $1 million put in the budget by the governor, and we're asking that some of that money do reach the counties because, unfortunately, we do have loose kids in every community, and there's always someone who doesn't have a place to stay. And these facilities are really expensive to run because they have to have 24-hour supervision. So we would like to have a little bit of money come down to each county. Also, I have the director of Jackson Street Youth Shelter here, Ann Craig, and also a former resident, Amanda Luke Kramers, and she was there 5 years ago, and so she's come back to support this effort.
Thank you. And your name for the record?
Mine?
Yes.
Karen Nibbler. Sorry.
It's all right.
Good evening, Co-Chair Schrader, Co-Chair Nolan, members of the committee. My name is Joanne Miller. I am the director of the Benton County Commission on Children and Families. I'm here this evening to offer support and give you information about the Oregon Commission on Children and Families budget that you just heard about, Senate Bill 5504. Benton County Commission on Children and Families, just as the other 35 commissions across the state of Oregon, is the community voice for services and supports that impact children, youth, and families. Through its many task forces, subcommittees, and other opportunities for youth, adult, and community involvement, the Commission provides opportunities to change the way we do business for children and families at the local level. In Benton County, we are very supportive of the mental health and public health budget. We really support the mental health need because of children's mental health issues that impact our communities. We support the use of dollars at the local level that can be leveraged to increase services and support for children and families throughout Benton County. Benton County Commission on Children and Families, as a result of our partnership and outcomes for children and families, we continue to have the lowest child abuse rate in our state. Benton County has the lowest teen pregnancy rate in the state, and we also have the lowest dropout rate in the state. That comes from the partnership and the efforts of working together as a community through the Commission on Children and Families. I'm encouraging to support the governor's recommended budget because although we have been named, again, one of the 100 best communities for children and youth in the state of, in the nation, we still suffer with issues such as a need for relief nursery, continued support of Healthy Start, and services for runaway and homeless youth. So I encourage you to consider the governor's recommended budget and look at the impacts that we have and the outcomes that the 36 county commissions provide in the community. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Let's get Diana up, Jim up, Bill, and Tom. We'll have Steve Bukowski on deck, Sarah Lehman on deck, Kimberly Cleveland, and Gregory Rohrer on deck. Start right up, Jim.
Okay. Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. My name is Diana Singh, and I'm a member of the Benton County Commission on Children and Families Youth Commission. The Youth Commission is a group of high school-age youth from all over the county. We do many projects and initiatives to help youth stay away from drugs, complete high school, and not get pregnant. The LOCO CCF staff help us implement all of our projects and initiatives, and we feel that they're a very important part of why we get things done in the community. As a young person in Benton County, I feel very honored that we were named one of the best 100 communities for young people by America's Promise in 2005 and 2007. In order for us to keep this honor, we need financial support from the legislature. I hope that you will consider the Oregon Commission on Children and Families and the Coalition of Children and Families Commission's budget requests for 2007 and 2009 under Senate Bill 5504. These funds are important for us as youth to continue to do the work we do in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Big right up, gentlemen. And Mike.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Jim Tierney, and I develop affordable housing and community facilities for Community Action Team in Northwest Oregon, specifically Clatsop, Tillamook, and Columbia counties. First of all, I want to thank you for your support for affordable housing and your budget. It's badly needed, as I will try to make the case here. Also, I want to encourage your support individually. I know this isn't a revenue measure or spending measure for HB 3485, which is a tool that would allow us to more safely restrict properties that we sell to homeowners. Members of the committee, our communities in Northwest Oregon are in trouble. I know that's true around the state, but we're particularly in trouble. I have some notes about Cannon Beach, where I work a lot, but really applies from Astoria to all the way down to Lincoln City that I know about. The kinds of trouble we have is that we can't find housing for teachers or policemen or city staffers. And in Cannon Beach right now, I'm looking at a piece of property. It's $1.4 million, and I can get 14 lots out of it. It's the only property I can bring into the city. It's $100,000 undeveloped per lot. When they're finished, lots are worth $250,000. And how do I find a way to make affordable housing and make it permanent there? We simply need more resources, and $100 million will do that. The second thing I wanted to say is that we also The second bill I wanted to support was affordability covenants. The issue there is if we do make housing out of those lots, we need the ability to restrict it in a way that's consistent with Oregon law. That's what that HB 3485 is. Thank you for your attention, and I'll let the others speak. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, and legislators from our area. I'm Bill Wagner. I'm a volunteer member of the Benton County Citizens Review Board, which is charged with reviewing the services and care provided to foster children, their parents, and their other care providers. Alyssa, I'd like you to remember that name, Alyssa. Alyssa's a child in state care because her mom was found by a judge to not be able to provide a safe home and a healthy home. She is a foster child. Her mom has had meth problems for 10 years, has had two children taken away by the state because she was found to be unable to care for her children. She is struggling, the mom is, with her meth habit. She's in and out of care. While Alyssa, a four-year-old, is struggling with her birth issues because of the drugs in her system when she was born. Those are very complex issues to deal with to decide what is the best future for Alyssa and her parents and her mom. There's a saying that it takes a village to raise a child. However, in the case of foster children, it is the judge who will decide what is the appropriate, permanent, safe, and healthy place for that child to be raised. If judges have overflowing caseloads and are not representative of the best and brightest of the legal profession, Alyssa and foster children like her will not be assured of a safe and healthy environment in which to grow and succeed. I'm here to urge you to modify your current draft co-chair's budget so that you will fully fund the Oregon Judicial Department as requested by the Chief Justice. He has requested $360 million. You have provided $304 million.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. Okay. Very good job.
Thank you for coming to Corvallis. I'm Tom Clancy Burns. I'm the Executive Director of Community Services Consortium. We're a nonprofit community action agency that serves Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties. We've been in operation since 1980 and help individuals and families who lack sufficient resources to meet their basic needs. I'm also a Citizens Review Board member, and I also would like to resonate with Bill as saying those are some of the most vulnerable children that we come in contact with, and that investment is huge. Working for CSC and representing them, I'd like to thank you, and the children and families of Head Start would like to thank you for your investment and your concern. Head Start children and families are learning that they can be safe, they can be warm, have nutritious meals, experience drug-free adults, and they can learn. And those are our upcoming generation, so thanks for your help on that. Thank you also for your significant investment in affordable housing. We are thrilled to learn that the co-chair's strong commitment, the Senate Bill 38, is the cornerstone of the affordable housing agenda this year. And I do know there's a lot of people way down the list that also have some support for this as well. And lastly, I'd like to thank you for helping people who are working one or two jobs, trying to make ends meet. They are great parents. They want to provide and would like to learn new skills, and we would truly appreciate your attention to any workforce legislation that would come your way.
Thank you. Good comments. Thank you all very much. All right, let's get next group up, Steve, Sarah, Kimberly, and Gregory. Then on deck we'll have George Heilig, Tim Willis, Rita Cavan, and Tony Dreger, please.
I guess I'm on.
Start right out, please.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Greg Rohr, and I am urging you to fund the Oregon Bioeconomy and Sustainable Technologies Research Center, formerly known as BEST, to the full amount of $3 million as detailed in the governor's budget. I'm a professor of chemical engineering at Oregon State University. I have over 20 years research experience on topics related to the conversion of plant biomass to fuels and chemicals. I also co-lead a working group comprised of research faculty from OSU, the USDA, and the U.S. Department of Energy. Our 10-member group is developing a focused research agenda for cellulosic biofuels in the state of Oregon based on exciting new technologies that are coming out of OSU research laboratories, such as microtechnology-based systems for gasification of biomass and robust alcohol fermentation systems. Cellulosic biofuels is a core initiative of the proposed BEST Signature Research Center. The state of Oregon has abundant and unique forms of cellulosic biomass, including grass straw, wheat straw, and softwood forestry residues that could be converted to liquid transportation fuels such as ethanol in volumes exceeding 100 million gallons annually. A focused research agenda will provide two outcomes needed to jumpstart an emergent cellulosic biofuels industry here in Oregon. First, although cellulosic biofuels is a hot ticket nationally, Oregon-based feedstocks are unique to the region and so are not on the national radar. However, new technologies coming out of OSU research laboratories will demonstrate that the conversion of homegrown Oregon biomass to transportation fuels is both feasible and economical, providing incentive for biofuel companies to locate in Oregon. Second, state support of a focused research agenda will provide the critical mass of expertise needed to win large federal grants and leverage state resources. These two outcomes will position Oregon as a regional leader in cellulosic biofuels. In closing, I urge you to fully fund the Oregon BEST Signature Research Center for the full funding of $3 million to promote renewable energy and sustainable technologies for Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Steve Bukowski, the director of the Lynn Benton Lincoln Workforce Investment Board. Thank you for the opportunity to address you regarding the critical workforce issues we are facing in Lynn Benton and Lincoln counties and throughout our great state. Oregon ranks 46th in the nation for post-secondary credentials per 100 students and 49th for community college students returning for a second year. An estimated 480,000 Oregonians are at the lowest literacy levels, nearly 14% of the population. Yet 67% of new jobs require skills equal to those of someone with completed college coursework. A shortage of skilled workers clearly puts Oregon at risk. Oregon has not kept pace with the investments necessary to have an adequate pipeline of ready-to-work skilled workers. Oregon is too reliant on dwindling federal investments in workforce development. Since the early 1970s, federal investments have shrunk from $28 billion to approximately $4 billion today, according to the National Center for Education and the Economy, and it keeps getting worse. Oregon will receive a 13% reduction in its annual workforce funding this coming July, over $75 million less in resources. In our region, we have worked closely with business, community colleges, and our local leadership to provide workers and youth with 21st century skills and to keep our businesses competitive in the global economy with significant results. But without additional resources, our ability to continue this work is at risk. Therefore, we think it is vital that the state commit resources to the development of a skilled and qualified workforce that can compete in the global economy. We urge you to seriously consider legislation that comes before you that will address this most serious workforce crisis. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Sarah Lyman, and I want to make some comments about the OSU Extension Service, and there's probably a few people here that would stand for extension. This be a good time to no.
There you go. Very good.
I'm a family forest landowner, and I manage our lands in three counties, Benton, Lane, and Lincoln County. And I feel extension needs to be robustly supported because, one, it is the way adult citizens and business people can access the resources of the university system, and two, extension is a prime example of joint financial and volunteer support. Today, when I manage our family forest lands, it takes all my personal resources and the resources of OSU forestry research to keep up with the world in the 21st century. Extension courses have been the underpinning of my journey to responsible and fruitful management. I would say few other state programs garner such loyalty and appreciation, and the multiplier effect of volunteers comes back to Oregon manyfold. I feel very strongly about extension. Mostly it meets my fairness quotient. Extension is the way that ordinary Oregonians and business people like me and my family can access the resources of the university system. We aren't in college anymore, but we should have access to the university we help finance in our lives and in our businesses. The big corollary to the fairness quotient is the cooperation quotient, where financial support from counties enables extension to be delivered on a local level. Please support the governor's budget and the higher education budget, which will help to continue a robust OSU extension. Sharing of costs, adult access, and partnerships with volunteers should pinpoint extension as cost-effective and education-effective. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan, members of the Ways and Means Committee, my name is Kimberly Cleveland, and I live in Corvallis. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for coming to me. I'm here tonight to ask you to support House Bill number 2406, which provides a Medicaid waiver for medically involved children. This is my daughter, Maggie. Every day, she uses medical equipment and supplies for feeding, mobility, and communication. She is thriving here in her community, going to school, participating in community activities, and living at home with her mom and her dad and her little dog, Pappy. Her lifestyle is made possible because of the supportive attitude of the people in this community. It is also because she qualifies for Medicaid. Maggie's story is always going to include extraordinary and exorbitant medical costs because medicine actually provides Maggie's daily needs as opposed to being ill or injured. Medicaid has made it possible for Maggie to flourish here in her own community with her friends and family. It allows us to live very simply and modestly, but still pay our bills and remain citizens in good standing. We face two major problems at this point, both springing from the family income and resource limit set by Medicaid. The first problem is that our transportation is no longer adequate. Every time we put our daughter in our Ford Escort, we risk injury to ourselves and consequently to her. We need to purchase a van that allows us to transport Maggie in her power chair, and these vans are very expensive. The income and resource limits prevent us from making enough or saving enough to purchase one. The second problem is that our long-term financial outcome is atrocious. We will most likely be unable to provide for our old age, and it's being neglected very badly. As college graduates, we could make more money, but to do so would jeopardize her life-sustaining benefits. House Bill 2406 would allow us to take more personal responsibility by allowing me to pursue career opportunities leading to earning enough to purchase our own van and earning enough to responsibly plan for our own future while giving her the home that she deserves. Once again, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Representative Gelzer has heard your call. All right, let's get George, Tim, Rita, and Tony up, and then have Lynn Gehrig, Sarah Swanberg, Kevin Ahern, and Carolyn Oakley on deck.
May it please the co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is George Heilig. I'm the president of the Benton County Bar Association, and I am appearing before you to urge you to amend the co-chair's budget and increase funding for the Oregon Judicial Department for the purposes of increasing salaries for judges, creating more judicial positions, and increasing the efficiencies of the judicial system through technology. Failing to adequately fund the judiciary unreasonably exposes society to a breakdown in the rule of law. And it is the rule of law that I urge you to consider. Right now, our judges are not paid enough. We are 50th out of 51 reporting jurisdictions. You are not going to attract the brightest and best to the judiciary to deal with the laws that you spend all your considerable time passing. And I don't know how many of you respond to your constituents who have encountered the judicial system and have found it lacking for them in a personal way. The Chief Justice recommended budget for 2007-2009 provides the resources needed to build and sustain the court system for the 21st century. The $359 million of general fund monies being requested provides staff to process the caseloads that matter to Oregonians. The co-chair's budget is at $304. It provides for technology investments that will improve access to justice for all people in the state, as well as improve the operations of the court system. It provides for additional judges to hear the case is filed in a timely basis. It provides for treatment courts. It increases salary for judges. If the community lose confidence in the judicial system, one of the three branches of government, we will risk a social disorder and the breakdown of our system. I urge you to amend your budget accordingly.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Tim Willis. I've been an attorney in private practice here in Corvallis for over 30 years. I've provided some written testimony to supplement what I'm going to try to say in 2 minutes. I'm also here to testify on my concern over the budget cuts proposed by the co-chairs to the governor's budget for the Oregon Judicial Department. And before I came up, I looked around the room, and I think I saw most, if not all, of the Linn and Benton County trial court judges here, and at least one justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. And I think they're here to show their concern on this process, too. Over the last few years, I've had a unique opportunity to gather information on the trial court judicial districts, and that's what I want to share with you in my time. I've been a member of the Joint Committee for Trial Court Judicial Resources since 2000. The job of that committee is to evaluate the need for new judges and to prioritize that need among the judicial districts and make a report to the legislature. As part of the process, we analyze the case filings in each judicial district, we solicit written information from each judicial district, and then we hold hearings allowing the presiding judges and or the trial court administrators to come and present additional testimony and answer our questions. And in that process, we find out a lot of information on the issues that are part of the judicial department's budget. We ask them about staffing. We ask them about technology use. We talk to them about facilities, and we talk to them about workloads. And from this process, I've reached a number of conclusions, and this will be my fourth legislative session doing this. I've concluded that there are not enough judges to handle the caseloads. The districts are short of staff. The technology needs updating. The judges are very underpaid for the work that they're doing, and many of the facilities have been neglected. I think this is an extremely serious problem.
Thank you.
You want this one?
Sure.
Thank you. Co-chairs Schrader and Nolan, and Representatives Olson and Gelster, and Senator Morris, and members of the committee. My name is Rita Cavan. I'm president of Linn Benton Community College. I'd like to introduce Hal Brayton, chairman of the Board of Education, who's here. And I'd like all the other members from LBCC to make themselves known at this time. Thank you. LBCC serves 23,000 students each year. Over 5,000 students attend full-time. Oregon's community college is the most effective, cost-effective preparation for Oregon's workforce. In only a few years, our degree partnership with OSU has admitted over 6,000 students. Not only do DPP students save up to $8,000 off of the cost of their four-year degree, but they graduate with an average of 18 fewer units and a higher GPA than students who attend all 4 years at OSU. Science labs are required to transfer and to graduate. We currently have the capacity to serve 5,000 science students each year, and we need the capacity to serve 8,700. Since I've been president, we've turned away over 10,000 students in 4 years. Our capital project will double our students' access to science, engineering, and health education. So far, we have raised over $1 million in private funds. We will immediately lose half of that if we do not receive the $3.75 million in the governor's recommended budget for the state funding that we are requesting. The state's investment in capital construction for community colleges is as vital to student access and degree completion as student aid. Community college students are tax-paying citizens who work hard to make a better life for themselves and their families. After graduating, they will stay in the local workforce. A short-term investment in the future of our students is good public policy that will stabilize families, help business, and strengthen Oregon's economy. I urge you to make it your priority to hold community college tuition down and to fund programs our communities need. Help our students become Oregon's economic backbone. Thank you.
Good job.
Good job.
We know where to find you.
Now, that's a tough act to follow. I'm Tony Drager. I live in Benton County. I do not come with a lot of credentials. My number one job is I'm a stay-at-home mom. My husband and I have chosen to be single income so we can raise our family. My number two job has been extension volunteer. After taking their training 14 years ago, I have logged in over 1,000 volunteer hours. That makes extension very cost-effective. You're paying for one agent, but you're getting free hours. My specialty has been in family community development with the food preservation and that type of thing. But firstly, I want to let you know that I feel just like you do, prevention is key. If we educate our people before things happened, that is a key issue. So if we teach people about food safety before they get sick, that's cost effective. It keeps them in the workforce. It keeps them out of the doctor's office, and it keeps you from paying for their medical bills. Also, if we teach, we hear in the news about all the foreclosures and bankruptcies. If we teach people about budgeting before that happens, that helps our economy. These ladies who are widowed that have never, ever, ever had a checkbook in their hand, do not know how to pay bills. If we teach them how, they can retire and we don't have to support them. They will know what a 401k is in a mutual fund. And we work right alongside all of the agencies that you feel are important. We work alongside the Boys and Girls Club, the Gleaners, the food banks. We want Oregon not to be at the bottom at 49 or 50. We want them to be at the top and self-sufficient and healthy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good testimony. All right, let's get Lynn, Sarah, Kevin, and Carolyn up, and then we'll have Russ Burchard, Christine Ertl, Kayla McAllister, and Tom Eversole on deck.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. Carolyn.
Want me to lead off? Great. Mr. Chairman and Madam Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, Carolyn Oakley, former state representative, and I'm here tonight representing Oregon State University. And you're going to see you can clap. You'll see a lot of the orange tags in the stickers on the folks. I am here tonight supporting Extension. I participated in 4-H as a child in Portland. I was a timid little girl from a very poor family and really couldn't do the activities that many of my friends got to do, but I could do 4-H. And it was probably the most fun thing I did each week. Sure, I learned to cook and I learned to sew, but I also developed character and also developed leadership skills. 4-H was very instrumental in paving the way for the success I have had in my life. I honestly believe that if more young people were involved in programs like 4-H, we would not have the many problems we have in society today. Looking beyond my childhood, I am currently a master gardener, and I enjoy promoting extension at events in our community, including Saturday Market. I also represent Benton County on the Extension Citizen Advisory Network. Extension provides valuable programs. It provides assistance for people of all ages and all economic areas, and it should be funded to its fullest extent. My request tonight, please support the integrated research and extension programs at Oregon State University, the Oregon Agricultural Experiment Station, the OSU Forest Resource Laboratory, and the OSU Extension. They need their statewide request of $15 million. I thank you for your consideration. You will be hearing from a number of other people from our community tonight, and they will talk about how the extension programs have been such a powerful impact on their lives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening to the entire committee. Thank you very much for coming to Corvallis.
My name is Sarah Swanberg, and I'm from Summit, Oregon, if you know where that might be in the Coast Range. But I am currently the director at ArtsCentric, which is the Lynn Benton Arts Council. I've been involved with culture, the arts, music, video production, preservation, my entire life as an arts administrator, a teacher, a parent, a musician, and an artist. For 20 years in Oregon, I have watched funding for the arts and culture dwindle, and I see our youth losing a depth in human connection and understanding that comes from experiencing the arts in their lives, in their communities. I urge you to simply restore the funding level to where it had been before cuts were made in the last biennium. Culture and the arts are what map and preserve our human existence. Give us the funding to engage our youth. We will match it many times over. Give us the funding to engage our communities. We will match it many times over. Give us the funding to engage everyone in the process of creativity and cultural preservation, and support the artists and arts administrators who offer a great economic boost to the state of Oregon. Thank you. I believe I have a few supporters for the arts and culture here tonight. If you'll stand.
Thank you. Very good. Yes, sir.
Co-chairs Schrader and Nolan and members of the committee, thank you for coming to Carvalho tonight, and thank you for considering the message that I bring to you. My name is Kevin Ahern, and I would like to lend a voice to the impact that the proposed budget will have on undergraduate instruction and training at the state's higher education system, particularly on the best students in the state of Oregon. I'm a member of the faculty of the Department of Biochemistry and Biophysics, and I bring to you tonight a letter that describes the nature of the biochemistry and biophysics students and the impact that this proposed budget will have on these and similar students. The letter was written by me and my colleagues who are with me tonight, and I will ask them to stand. Students in biochemistry and biophysics pursue one of the most challenging majors at OSU, spanning both the physical and the biological sciences. Students are attracted to this major because of the rigor and the exciting advances in the scientific area. As the university has grown from about 14,000 to 18,000 students, the number of biochemistry biophysics majors has nearly doubled from 70 to approximately 130 students today. Biochemistry students are campus leaders, and they excel in the classroom, in research laboratories, and in extracurricular activities. They represent the best and brightest students in the state of Oregon. These students enter OSU with SAT scores that are 160 points above the university average. In the three-year period from 2004 to 2006, the entire Oregon university system had six students recognized nationally as Goldwater students as being the top students in science, math, and engineering. Of those six students, five of those were biochemistry and biophysics majors at OSU. Biochemistry and biophysics majors are involved in research at OSU and research internships at Harvard University and the NIH, and have been finalists for the Rhodes and Marshall International Scholarships. In the 2005-2006 year, nine biochemistry and biophysics students served as presidents of campus organizations. We are especially concerned about the impact of cuts to instructional programs and to infrastructure on the experience of the best students in the OUS system. Our department, as with all units at OSU, has endured gradual erosion of its budget over the last 10 years. Just this past year, this department took a greater than 12% cut, with the immediate impact being the loss of one of its longtime faculty members to another university.
You'll have to finish up. I'm sorry, Mr. Ahern.
Okay. Our request, again, is that you reinstate the $35 million for support and instruction in Appropriations Bill SB 5515.
Very good.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of OSU Extension. I've grown up on a family farm close to Albany. I've been involved in agriculture in one sense or another my entire life. I'd just like to share some of the things that I've observed with OSU Extension and its value to our community. I've seen and walked alongside and worked with extension agents and on-farm field trials to verify efficacy of varying fertilizer rates to make sure that we don't have nitrogen in our groundwater, those sorts of things. Also checking out herbicides and the proper rate to not have residues in our environment that could impact our neighbors and community, but also maintain the purities that are necessary for our grass seed commodity to be sold nation and worldwide. I recently heard, I think yesterday actually, on the news of the possibility of field burning being eliminated. If that is indeed the case, the research requirements are going to be even more astronomical just to come up with other methods to counteract the pests and diseases that field burning has afforded us. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. All right, let's get Russ, Christine, Galen, and Tom up. We have Bruce Hamilton on deck, Margarita Donnelly, Emily Steele, and Stephanie Stafford.
Good evening. My name is Christine Ertl, and I am a member of the Salem-Keizer chapter of Stand for Children, a national grassroots organization that advocates for positive, lasting change for children. There are some more of us in the audience if you'd like to stand. As a parent and a licensed clinical social worker, I see firsthand how consistent underfunding of K-12 schools and Head Start affects children's ability to succeed in school and in life. I have two school-aged children in the public schools. One is a sophomore and one is in fifth grade. My sophomore is a TAG student, but there has never been a school-based TAG program in any of his elementary, middle, or high schools. These do not exist in our district unless a parent volunteer organizes an after-school activity. He is enrolled in honors classes in his high school with 42 students in his math class and 35 in his history class. He sits on the radiator in history and works from a text that still identifies East and West Germany. To the credit of his school, the music program is strong and competitive, and this is what motivates him to maintain high academics. We are thankful for this in our community and are appalled that music is not offered throughout the state. My daughter has 30 children in her classroom. This means that her classmates get a maximum of 12 minutes of their teacher's undivided attention on any given day. In addition, 20% of her classmates are on IEPs, but the school only has access to a reading specialist a quarter time. The kindergarten class, in spite of best practice recommendations of 15 to 20 students, has 30 students enrolled in each class. As a result of these large class sizes, our building has three empty classrooms, which we lease to the district for special programs. I appreciate the co-chairs for prioritizing K-12 education in their budget recommendations. Their $6.245 billion allocation brings us significantly closer to our goal of $6.3 billion this session for K-12 schools. At this time, I want us to keep in mind that we are still significantly over $1 billion short of fully funding the quality education model. In my mind, giving every child in Oregon a quality education should remain the goal. In addition, as a licensed clinical social worker...
We'll have to have you finish up on
that. Okay. Well, I want you to know that we can work to fund education, and it will work together to work with you to pass badly needed additional revenue sources, such as the tobacco tax and the corporate minimum tax. Finally, I just want to remind you that many things we need can wait, but children can't. Thank you very much.
Go ahead.
It's clear I'm going to cut some things from my testimony. Thank you, co-chairs, for holding this hearing. It's very important for you to get out and hear all our needs in the state, and I think we've heard tonight how connected all aspects of education are. I'm also a member of Stand for Children. My name is Galen McAllister, and I have four children in the Salem-Keizer Public Schools. I come here tonight to thank you for setting aside $6.245 billion to begin reinvesting in education for Oregon. The effects of several years of divesting in education really hit me as I sat at my daughter's high school graduation last year and scanned the program for children she had left fifth grade with. From a group of about 60 fifth graders from her high-poverty elementary school, four graduated with her. Of course, some moved away, but as our dropout rate and achievement gap can show you, the cuts of the last several years have hit the poorest students the hardest. And Salem-Keizer is considered one of the lucky school districts because the growth of students we've experienced made the dollar cuts look smaller. In essence, squeezing more children into the same program allowed us to avert national headline-making cuts, but children still suffered. Here's just some of what I saw as what we know about works, what works in education was pushed aside so we could do more with less. As the first wave of cuts came, our school lost a reading and math specialist, which mainly coincided with an increase in pressure to increase reading and math scores.
class sizes rose significantly. With a waiting list for preschool and knowing that school readiness is key to school success, we reduced the program by half. With the realization that students need full community support to succeed, we kept the community school's outreach and volunteer coordinators. With children showing up to school with wounds from the increasing meth epidemic, we cut nursing assistants, prevention and intervention specialists, school psychologists, speech pathologists, and physical therapists. There's many more things, but I want to let you know that we also, as we criticize teachers more and more in the public, we froze our teacher salaries for a year. I could go on and on as year after year, with students arriving by the thousands, we cut and froze our investment in education. At the start of high school, my daughter's classes were overcrowded, but they said, don't worry, the class sizes will get smaller by November. They did, not because they added more teachers, but because they let students drop out.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate that. Co-Chair Schrader, Co-Chair Nolan, members of the committee, thank you for letting me testify this evening. My name is Tom Eversole, and I'm the health administrator for Benton County. And it's my job to protect and promote the health and public health and mental health of residents of this community. To that end, I ask you to consider restoring the $5 million in support in the governor's recommended budget for local health, local public health departments, and also to adequately fund community mental health services so that the state hospital program can succeed as planned. Clearly, the state does not have the resources to fund a Cadillac public health system, even though Oregonians deserve one. What we've purchased over time is a Chevy system marked down 50% because it has no airbags. Looks okay in the showroom, but I'm not sure you'd want to trust your life to it in a wreck. Under funding one component of the public health system or a public service system has a costly impact that cuts across other public services in the system. Failure to fund daily observed therapy for tuberculosis, for example, results in increased expenses for jails and for hospitals that have to care for people who are resistant to the antibiotics that we normally use. An inadequate public health mental health system is detrimental to allied public services. The 2005 budget partially restored an investment in community mental health services. In the following year, the number of adults arrested dropped by 6,000. Additionally, 4,200 fewer students were expelled from schools, resulting in an additional 12,000 plus student days in school. Similarly, our children cannot learn when their schools are closed due to our inability to control Norwalk virus, whooping cough, or avian influenza. Many Oregon health departments lack the capacity to track, monitor, and control communicable diseases. Furthermore, like the Chevy without the airbag, Oregon's health departments cannot adequately mobilize surge capacity for public health emergency preparedness. I urge the committee to strongly consider restoring the proposed funds in support of local public health and to adequately fund local mental health programs. Thank you very much. Thank you.
My name is Russ Burchard, and I'm a teacher at Lynn Benton Community College. I teach students who are working toward their GEDs. Most of my students come from poverty, and they're working hard to improve their lives. We know, as one of the previous speakers said, that a high school education is not sufficient for survival in the new economy. My students need to go on to college to have any real chance at a good life, and they can do that only if we make funding community colleges a priority. Last week, a former student of mine stopped by to visit me. She told me that she was trying to put together enough money for 2 weeks' rent in a rundown motel because her financial aid disbursement doesn't come out until the third week of the term, and without it, she doesn't have enough money for the security deposit on an apartment. So she's just one example of how close to the edge my students are living. She wants to go on to be a nurse, and she has all the intellectual ability to do that, but she needs our help. She needs there to be room in our nursing program, and she needs the tuition to be low enough to afford, both of which require an investment by the state. She needs there to be good science labs at LBCC to prepare her for nursing. And as you've heard before, we've done some great work in obtaining donors and other funding for that, but it won't happen without an investment by the state in capital construction. No single decision that you make this session will make or break the student's life, but a long string of decisions by this legislature and future legislatures will make a huge difference in the lives of my students over the next 20 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're approaching 8 o'clock, as you can all see. We'll be going for another hour, so it's unlikely that anyone after page 8 or 9 is going to, unfortunately, get an opportunity to testify. We've got good testimony going a little long, and we've got a lot of enthusiasm out there, which is great, but it's going to limit the number of people we can actually hear tonight. So just to give you information, we hope you stay and listen, though, because this is great, great information. My co-chair reminds me, if you can't stay, please submit any written testimony you might have. So we've got our people up there. We'll also want to have on deck here. Where are we here, for goodness sakes? Peter Kanegi, Don Schweitzer, Aubrey Dobrowski, and Mike Rinkin on deck. Please proceed.
Good evening. My name is Bruce Amelman. I'm a local farmer in Linn County. As a young farmer, I have two things that are important to me regarding extension, and I'm here to support OSU Extension. The first is research. I'm the current chairman of the Oregon Processed Vegetable Commission, and we're involved extensively with extension and the research end of that, and that's very invaluable to us. Without the extension service, we wouldn't have the varieties, the weed management tools, the integrated pest management tools to keep us competitive in our agricultural market. Second is the availability of information to farmers. We don't have all the knowledge, and we can go ask an extension agent for information, and we can get that and help keep us raising new crops and keeping us competitive. Weakening in the system would be very worrisome to me. It will make it harder for farmers to stay competitive. If we don't have a strong agricultural economy, because we don't have extension, we're going to lose our support structure that we have, and I think that's very important to us as farmers, and we need the extension around. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Emily Steele, and I've lived in Corvallis for 36 years, working as an artist and raising a family. For the past 10 years and more, I've worked at ArtsCentric as a volunteer on their art committee for exhibitions and on their board. We have worked very hard with real commitment for the youth in Benton and Linn counties to provide art through art in education, providing teachers in the public schools, providing a program called Youth at Risk for children who need to develop a strong self-esteem. We foster that by teaching them and allowing them to create art and install it in public places. We have classes for many youth at the Corvallis Arts Center in Corvallis. We have a summer camp program. In addition to this, we have a beautiful gallery and put on 11 exhibitions every year. This space also provides an arena for lectures, for theater, for music, for poetry. We encourage all our young people and adults in Linn and Benton counties to take advantage of these programs. We are very dependent on you and on the Oregon Arts Commission, Cultural Trust, to continue to fund our organization. I want to thank you for being here, and I want to close with a short quote of Albert Einstein, who said, "The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the source of all true art and science." Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. I'm Margarita Donnelly, the director of Calix Incorporated, a nonprofit publisher of art and literature based here in Benton County in Corvallis. I'm here to support the funding of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. It has been a disturbing reality to me to discover how low the arts are funded in the state of Oregon. I'm not sure of our current standing, but I believe it's 45th. Out of 55 states and territories. I'm here to ask you to support the Arts Commission Creative Oregon Initiative. The arts build community in Oregon, account for over $250 million in direct spending each year, and employ a growing number of people in both the nonprofit and commercial sectors. Grants made by the Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust are matched many times over and contribute not only to the economy, community revitalization, understanding cultural differences, and attracting visitors to our state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Greetings. My name is Stephanie Stafford. I came here this evening to share a story about a single mother. An 18-year-old woman who started her career path in a lumber mill to support her infant son, a woman who couldn't afford a car and bum rides from her coworkers, a woman who asked to be laid off so she could pursue college to discover a better life for her and her son, a woman who lived on $8,000 yearly salary, HUD housing, Oregon health plan, credit cards, and student loans. A woman who earned a bachelor's degree in law enforcement within 5 years of leaving the lumber mill. A woman who became employed at Benton County and now the state of Oregon. I am this woman. In the beginning, I remember setting simple goals. I wanted to have a nice car when my son went to first grade. I met my goal. I wanted to go to college and be the second child of 14 siblings to earn a bachelor's degree. I met my goal. But most of all, above all my goals, I wanted my own home. I wanted my son to have the house he grew up in. I moved to Corvallis 7 years ago for a better place to raise my son. With the high cost of rent in Corvallis, I was never able to save any money for a down payment. I lived paycheck to paycheck. I never thought I could afford to buy a home in Corvallis. I feared committing to a large mortgage payment, and the Corvallis market was not affordable for me to purchase a home. I would work hard toward my goal, then the housing prices would go up enough to make home ownership unaffordable again and create a hopeless circle for me. When I discovered the home ownership program, I met a lot of people like me, people who didn't have any savings, who worked hard, who didn't have perfect credit, and who wanted the same thing I did. Thanks to the assistance of Willamette Neighborhood Housing, I am a homeowner today. I was educated and empowered by them. My goal and dream of home ownership is finally real, but without the help of the home ownership program, I probably would have lost sight. Thank you for considering the $100 million for housing package and Senate Bill 38. It will allow affordable new housing for working families like mine.
Congratulations. All right, let's get Peter, Don, Aubrey, and mic up and have Judy Rinkin, Diane Farrell, Marcy Eastham, and G. Pugh on deck.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, thanks for this opportunity to speak before you. I'm here to encourage you to fully support extension packages. You've heard a little bit about them. And what the point I would like to make about extension is that...
Need your name, too.
Oh, Peter Kanagi.
Thanks.
Farmers and foresters are, in essence, we're land managers. We manage a big part of this state's environment. And that $15 million that you invest in extension is one of the best things you can do for our environment. Extension is one of the main, if not the main, source that a lot of farmers and foresters use for the information that we need to make daily on-the-ground decisions, how we manage our nutrients, how we use our crop protection products and stuff. It's just a... a really good investment in Oregon's environment to put that full funding for extension. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs, as well as committee members. My name is Mike Rinkin. I live here in Albany. I have a son with a mental illness, and I represent NAMI as well as Compassion Ministries. Do you know that more than 160,000 Oregonians live with a mental illness? My son is one of them. My son has been at the state hospital for the past 48 months and has been on the ready-to-place list for a group home for the past year. He needs to have community supports that are not there. In the next several years, our state is going to build a state hospital system, which we need community front-end services such as crisis intervention services, psychiatric hold rooms, supported employment and supportive education and training. And this is echoed by the Oregon State Hospital Master Plan Phase 2. I myself left the pastorate over 13 years ago to establish an organization called Compassion Ministries to educate and train the faith community to reach out to this population and their families. We are offering hope to a people through volunteers. However, we need your partnership to provide a responsible and strong community mental health system that will stop a costly and inadequate approach to care by providing a budget of $116 million recommended by the Oregon Community Health Coalition. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, here I got one.
You want to go?
Sure. My name is Don Schweitzer. I'm the program coordinator for Host Youth and Family Services, a program of Northwest Human Services in Salem, Oregon. I'm here tonight to advocate for runaway and homeless youth in Oregon. I have a handout for you. I'll just hit some of the high points and pass these out to you then. In 2005, the Oregon Homeless and Runaway Work Group estimated that 24,000 youth aged 11 to 21 had run away, been abandoned, or were homeless in Oregon in the fiscal year 2002-2003. The federal funding coming into Oregon to support services in seven counties only funds partially funds those services and only allows them to serve 5,000 youth annually. Oregon youth are turned away or unserved because the federal fund services sites lack the capacity to address the need, and 29 other communities have no resources to respond to the need. The proposed funding from the governor's budget was $1 million, which would be the first dedicated funding to runaway and homeless youth in Oregon in nearly two decades. And it is a good start and much appreciated. However, it does not go far enough in addressing the extensive needs in counties across Oregon for safe shelter and services for these youth. The Oregon Homeless Runaway and Youth Coalition, the Oregon Alliance of Children's Programs, Adversary Council, and the Coalition of Advocates for Equal Access for Girls are advocating for the OCCF's original request of $4.6 million. Why dedicated funding is important for this population? Funds that are directed to other agencies or organizations that serve multiple populations do not reach these youth. Increases in education will not impact these youth as they are often disconnected by as early as age 11. Resources to increase housing, affordable housing, will not impact these youth as they are not ready for permanent housing. And increase in mental health and health services often do not support these youth as there are barriers to entering those services. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is Aubrey Dabrowski, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Runaway and Homeless Youth Coalition. And I, too, like Dawn, want to advocate to return the money for runaway and homeless youth to the OCCF budget with an increase from the $1 million, which is a great start, to the $4.6 that was originally recommended by OCCF in order to create, enhance, and expand services, emergency services, and shelter services to prevent those youth from entering more costly systems throughout Oregon. The results for increased funding would include child safety, family reunification, improved access to supportive services, increased connectivity of runaway and homeless youth with education and employment, And to give you an example of how youth can succeed, I'm going to share a story from a youth who actually has received services. To Margaret and her family, the threat of homelessness and poverty were constant. Ever shifting between motels and substandard rentals, Margaret and her five siblings struggled to stay in school. Her parents struggled to stay employed. As Margaret reached her mid-teens, conflict with her parents escalated and was further exasperated by their new round of unemployment. Margaret was told to leave home. At 15, Margaret was seeking shelter every night with friends, with men in hotels, in the parks, and occasionally back with her parents. Margaret sought out the homeless and runaway youth provider. Efforts to reconnect her with her parents surged and faltered. At 16, she applied for and entered a transitional living program, a TLP program, in Bend. TLP staff began to coach her in study, employment, and independent living skills. Margaret graduated in 2006 at the top of her class and is now enrolled at a community college. She continues to work towards a healthy relationship with her parents and siblings. Thank you for your time, and I'd really encourage you not to forget this vulnerable population. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Judy, Diane, Marcy, and GP up. We'll have Drew Foster, Annie Peltier, Annette Von Duan, and Tanya Pritt up next. Start right in.
I want to thank the committee for coming to Corvallis. This is really important to us. My name is Diane Farrell. We have a son who has had a serious mental illness for 18 years. As a retired history professor, I've worked for NAMI Mid-Valley for several years now, so I'm in close touch with the community's needs for mental health services. The most important thing is the support of community mental health services. At the local level, it cannot even be said that we have adequate emergency psychiatric treatment available. Actively suicidal persons without insurance are sometimes turned away from the ER under apparently instructions from a county mental health department that may not overspend its budget. It seems superfluous to point out that there is no day treatment program for the mentally ill. Medication can get you a minimally functional patient. It takes active intervention to achieve recovery. However, many people aren't even getting medication, and they're the ones who wind up in the jails to no one's benefit, to everyone's expense. It'll take more money than the governor's proposed $10 million. It would take more like $20 million to do what needs to be done. You must not flinch. It's time to do the right thing. Civilized societies support education and their disabled. I'd also like to remind you that HB 2734, Restoring General Assistance, also called the Bridge Program, would provide desperately needed support for persons waiting for approval of their disability status. This sometimes takes 2 years.
Finish up there. I'm sorry.
It's a no-brainer. It won't cost you money.
I like hearing that. Well, we have to move on.
Thank you.
We got to move on. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for this opportunity to come and to share a few thoughts. Senator Schrader and Representative Noland and the rest of the committee, thank you. I am Judy Rinken and I live in Albany. I am here tonight speaking as a private citizen. I was several years ago the co-founder of the Oregon Family Support Network, which supports families who have children with serious emotional and mental health needs. Through that tenure, I discovered an awful lot. Not only am I a mom, and our son is now 35, but I learned an awful lot about early intervention, about early identification, and community supports. We cannot expect our children to be ready to go to school. We cannot expect our children to grow up to be healthy individuals if they are dealing with serious mental health needs that are not being addressed early on. We know from our friends in the developmental disability community that early identification and treatment, education, has gone a long way. We need to follow their lead. We want our children to be safe in the community. We want our children to be able to live at home. Our children need to be in school. Our children need to learn. But they have to be ready to be in school. You cannot send a child to school with serious mental health needs that are not being met. I also know preschool programs where children have been kicked out because they cannot stay there. I want to encourage you to support the governor's budget and the tobacco tax to further childhood and youth mental health services. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marcy Eastham. I'm the Northwest U.S. Regional Government Affairs Manager for Hewlett-Packard, based here in Corvallis. And Hewlett-Packard came to Corvallis a little more than 30 years ago. And since that time, we've seen the high-tech industry really explode in the state of Oregon. I'm sure that most of you have high-tech companies in your particular regions. And one of the challenges that high-tech companies have is the ability to hire quality engineers. It's crucial to our ability to compete, and companies like HP and most high-tech companies compete globally. That means Oregon competes globally. 10 years ago, the legislature passed a bill that established the Engineering and Technology Industry Council. And that council was given the charter to collaborate with industry as well as with higher ed to help improve the quality of engineering education in Oregon. You should feel very proud that it has been a success story, and we continue to improve the quality of engineering education in Oregon. Since that 10-year time span, Oregon companies and 8 campuses have come together to create a culture that has measurable results. There has been an initial investment of $68 million by the state of Oregon. That in return was matched with $130 million from the private sector. That is a net return of $1.90 for every dollar invested by the state. In any measure, that's a pretty good return. Thank you. I am here today to ask you to please consider the governor's request for $17 million for ETIC. We now have one of the most productive faculties in the country. We would like to see that continue. We would like to see Oregon companies continue to expand and be able to stay in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good job. All right, let's get Drew Foster and Peltier, Annette Von Juan, and Tanya Pritt, I suppose, will represent Ms. Hughley and Roberts, who'd like to come forward and stand. We probably won't have room for them to testify as we try and get lots of people here, but if you want to support your comrade in arms, please come up.
Co-Chair Schrader, Co-Chair Nolan, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ann Peltier. I manage the public health programs for Linn County Department of Health Services. And I'm here to talk about public health in Oregon and some in Linn County. Oregon is in the bottom 5 nationally in public health funding. Some evidence of the erosion of this funding stream to this critical service is in 2006, the United Health Foundation report ranked Oregon 48th in childhood immunizations. What that means to us, what we haven't been able to do, is outreach, education, doing immunization clinics to some of these small rural populations that have these low rates. We haven't been able to do that. In the area of communicable diseases, Linn County itself has had 5 outbreaks in the last year. And what we have, this has been primarily in the senior living sectors, facilities. We've also had some cases associated with the national outbreaks, such as the spinach one and the recent E. coli. What we haven't been able to do because of the erosion of the funds is the education of some of the managers of these facilities. the outreach to the staff of the facilities to teach them about person-to-person transmission and how to help the families and the visitors not to spread any of the diseases. I would like to encourage you to restore the funding for the public health in Oregon and to get us back up from bottom five to a little higher.
Thank you.
I'm Drew Foster. I work for Cascade West Council of Governments. I'm here to talk to you about what will be lost if all funding to the regional investment program goes away. I think the main things that will be lost to our communities, to our region, and to our economy is flexibility, coordination, and collaboration. The Regional Investment Board is the primary agency that looks long-term at what's happening with our economy and tries to see what's coming down the road. They make tremendous efforts to collaborate. Earlier you heard about the aquarium science program at Oregon Coast Community College. The Regional Investment Board put funding in to help them begin their curriculum development, which helped them jumpstart that program and help their people focus on putting together a good program rather than spending a lot of time coming up with the funds to get the program started. It's the only flexible money out there to support community and economic programs. It's locally controlled, so my board, which is a four-county board, Benton, Lane, Lincoln, and Lynn, has 20 members, and plus a member from the tribe, the Sluts tribes, can look at a problem. And when we funded the last set of projects that were focused on short-term job creation, within 3 months, we were able to go from application to contract and getting the money on the ground to those projects that were really ready to move forward quickly. When the legislature came out in 2003 and said the regional investment program should focus all its efforts on short-term job creation, our board jumped into that, and we were able to support businesses who went on to develop and their projects, and they went on to develop 1,100 jobs and brought over $40 million in matching funds to those projects. And they were everything from large projects like the Signal Call Center in Albany, Pace American coming to Lebanon, to Radar Plumbing in Waldport, which was able to expand from two people to four people. And getting two more jobs in Waldport is pretty much as important as getting 300 more jobs in Albany.
I won't tell him he said that.
We've also been able to support matching funds for loan programs, which have brought federal funds in here. For less than $500,000, we were able to bring in about $1.25 million, and it would have been more, but the federal money is getting cut back, and so we have to match it a higher. It used to be we would match it $3, $1 for three of their dollars or four of their dollars. Now it's one-to-one, so that's getting much tighter. A lot will be lost, both short-term and long-term. Nobody else is looking at the long-term. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Annette Von Juan, and I'm an electrical engineering professor at Oregon State University, and I am also leading the wave energy program at OSU. I am here today to support the full Oregon Innovation Council funding package, and in particular, I would like to highlight the value of the wave energy initiative. The Wave Energy Initiative requires state funding in order to fully explore Oregon's wave energy potential. And that includes $500,000 a year over the biennium for research and development. And primarily, that would go towards supporting undergraduate students and graduate students at Oregon State University that would be educated and graduating with a keen understanding of the importance of renewables for the state of Oregon. In addition, this funding would go towards partially funding several faculty members and the necessary equipment to really make wave energy competitive. That it would also go towards the necessary modeling and experimentation in order to determine the potential impacts of wave energy parks on wave energy heights or wave heights, also on currents, sand transport, marine life, and environmental impact, etc. So I really encourage you to support this wave energy initiative. Oregon has a tremendous wave energy climate off the Oregon coast, and combined with our strategic facilities at Oregon State University and the College of Engineering, also the Hatfield Marine Science Center, we have the potential to lead the nation and the world in wave energy production, research, and development. We also will be developing the engineers of the future that are so enthusiastic about making a strong impact on our energy future. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm Tanya Pritt. I would like to give up my time to these.
That's members. Perfectly fine.
Thank you.
Committee members, my name is Terry Roberts, and I have 5 days shy of 11 months clean and sober. I'm here today to speak about why treatment works. I grew up in a professional military family, started drinking at 3. My family parties were, even colonels were present. Adolescent years, I drank even more and remembered moonshine stills and bong hits galore. At 16, I received my first DWI while I was frying on acid and drinking moonshine. In my life, I've received 6 DWIs, 4 that I didn't actually remember. I was in a car wreck June 1st in 1987, where I killed 2 people in a head-on collision. I spent 6 years in prison, where I did not stay clean and sober. I was suicidal during much of this time, didn't care whether I lived or died. My prior life to sobriety was unpredictable. I didn't know what the city or state I'd be in or who I'd wind up with. My life was filled with uncertainty, chaos, violence. I entered graduation, even 7 outpatient treatments. Almost 11 months ago, I entered treatment in Roseburg, then transferred to Milestone, October 2006, for outpatient service. Since I came to Milestones, I've learned why I felt the way I did from childhood. This new awareness has helped me to define a recovery program with the help of AA that keeps me sober today. There are several reasons why I stay in treatment. One was so successful. I was finally ready. I was given enough love, kindness, and understanding that helped me to be okay with myself. I've identified why I used and also have identified my relapse triggers. I have a sponsor, and I attend meetings almost daily. I'm looking forward to volunteering work at the Cat's Meow, a business here in Corvallis that supports the Humane Society. I'll be chairing the meeting on site of Milestones Women Program as part of my desire to give back to the community that helped me. After successfully completing residential treatment, I was able to move into a small cottage in drug-free housing sponsored by Milestones Women's Program. I'm here tonight to share with you that treatment works and has not only given me back my life, but also allowed me to carry the message of hope and recovery to the addict and alcoholic who is still suffering. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck. All right. Let's get Chris Brantley up on deck, up. I guess we're up to up now, aren't we? Lynn Hall. And we've got a bunch of people here for our provider rates. Maybe Joanne Furman could represent her group. If there's someone else, that's fine. Please come up. I want to see Joanne Furman, Brent Watkins, David Sabak, and Carolyn Baroga. You can pick amongst you who you'd like to testify. And then we've got another group from Marion County, Commissioner Sam Bartano, Walt Begley, Allison Kelly. Come forward and let one of you guys can speak for, assume the commissioner would speak for the rest of the group. Then on deck, we're going to have Sue Mackey, Rivka Weinsteiger, and retired Senator Cliff Trow. Start right in.
Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Good evening. Thanks for coming down to Corvallis, and I welcome the chance to talk about Oregon's budget. My name is Chris Brantley. I'm a retired school administrator and volunteer for Stand for Children. I want to talk to you tonight about our mentoring program proposal, and I want to talk about the reinvestment in schools that we need. First of all, the mentoring program. We currently lose over 30% of our new teachers within the first 5 years of teaching. I remember my first 5 years of teaching, and I remember that I had the guy a student taught with right down the hall, and that helped me immensely. Most people don't have that, and we find that many people leave. Good mentoring programs have stopped this throughout the country, and we laud the inclusion of $5 million in the co-chair's budget for a mentoring program. spring program. We look forward to standing up and helping the Department of Education and the legislature get that program underway and hopefully getting our new teachers and administrators through their first 3 years successfully. Reinvestment in education. You heard the quality education model mentioned earlier. Quality education model was developed in the 90s. It was developed by a group that was not educators and was designed to define for us the amount of money that it was going to take to for education to raise all of our students to the level defined by the SIM law. What we find is that if we were to fund that law, or as it stands in today's dollars, that would cost us $7.8 billion. 6.6 is what it would take just to get up to the pre-recession level. We've asked for 6.3. The co-chairs have put 6.245 in. We thank you for that. We hope that that can help us move forward in terms of reinvesting in the schools. And we know that there are a few districts in the state who will continue to have to cut under that number. There, most of the districts
very
in the state will be able
testimony.
To reinvest.
Thank
you for your time.
Good evening, co-chairs Nolan and Schrader, and I welcome the committee as well. My name is Lynn Hall. I work for Kidco Head Start in Lynn and Benton counties, and we also serve Jefferson area in Marion County. We serve 376 children, 3- and 4-year-old children from low-income families. We serve about half of the eligible children in our area, children that are eligible for Head Start services. I'm here to speak in support of the governor's budget to ask you to keep the $39 million in the budget for Oregon Head Start. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Joanne Furman, and I work with Partnerships and Community Living. I'm also representing the Oregon Rehabilitation Association. I have several people here tonight supporting us. They can all stand up and know that we're here. Okay. I'm here representing the 140 people that we support, their families, our 400 staff, and the other 6,000 staff across the state who are dedicated direct support professionals working to improve the lives of people with developmental disabilities. I want to ask you to fully fund the provider increases that we need to address the emerging crisis in our system. Our turnover rate statewide is over 65%. Many of our staff leave in the first year. We experience ongoing vacancy rates of 15% in our staff. And while those numbers are alarming, what's more alarming is the effect that it has on the people we support. They go to bed at night with one person supporting them and maybe wake up the next morning with someone they don't know. Turnover isn't just about numbers. It's about the impact that it has on the lives of the people we support. Our direct support professionals deserve a good paying wage for the hard work they do. But more importantly, Oregonians with developmental disabilities deserve a strong, stable workforce who can support them in the lives that they deserve. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Brent Watkins, and I also represent Partnerships in Community Living. And Joanna shared many of the statistics I would share. So I'd just like to share a couple of quick examples of how the current wages impact people they're supporting with people with disabilities and why they often leave and why the turnover is so high. So specifically, I want to talk about insurance and the current average wage for a person providing supports to people with disabilities is about $8.50 an hour, which is about $1,470 a month. Out of that, if the person is to provide insurance for their family, it's about $550 a month. So you can imagine, that's pre-tax, by the way, the $1,470, that many of their families go without insurance. So what does that mean to people with disabilities and these employees? It means that most of Oregon's most vulnerable citizens are at greater risk of abuse and neglect as qualified professionals leave for higher wages. The resulting turnover means that people are exposed to caregivers that are well-intended but lack skills that take time to develop. It means we should expand the definition of what most vulnerable citizens to include children of caregivers, as they must often go without needed benefits, putting them, at greater risk of illness and disease. This does not include many children who must endure pain because mom and dad can't afford to take them to doctors and dentists. Finally, it means that significant public assistance is required to supplement these substandard wages. So in conclusion, I'd just like to acknowledge that many of you have been great supporters of the disability community over the years and implore you that the $60 million is not a number that is just random or pie in the sky, something that is icing on the cake. This is needed wages for these people. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, let's get someone from the Bartano Group to represent the Children and Families Commission testimony. We've had some of that already. Sue Mackey, Reba Weinsteiger, and Cliff Troop, they're here. And then on deck, we'll have Jason Carlisle. And we've got a bunch of students from Western Oregon. Maybe get a couple of you to represent your group, if that'd be okay. We've got EMLA, Tiffany McCoy, Sam Summers, Janet Costello. So two of you guys could come up. And Cindy Bond, too, in the on-deck group. Start, please.
Chair Schrader, Nolan Committee, thank you. My name is Sam Brentano, Marion County Commissioner. I brought three of us. We plan on each taking parts. My material would be included in some written material I'm going to leave with you. I do ask that you do take a look at that.
Sure.
And it is important, but I want to pass and let Allison Kelly lead our group.
Good evening, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. The Marion County District Attorney is with us. If he were allowed to speak, he would tell you that his system is overwhelmed. I'm Allison Kelly. I am an attorney, a facilitator. I provided some assistance for both the Oregon Commission on Children and Families and the Marion County Commission on Children and Families for the strategic implementation of their many projects. I'm also an adjunct associate professor with Portland State University's Mark Hatfield School of Government. I teach in the public administration program there. So I see these issues from a macro perspective and a micro perspective. We're here today to urge you to fund the commission, the State Commission on Children and Families system, at a level higher than what's in the current co-chair's budget. We urge you to fund the commission work at the level recommended by the Coalition for Local Commissions. To the degree that you can add new investment is the degree that you can protect the investment you put in public schools. The degree that you do not fund and provide new funding for the commission's work will undermine and threaten your investment in public schools, and here's why. Children can't learn when they come to school from abusive and traumatic home environments. Their brains are so overwhelmed by trauma, they can't form the neural pathways to absorb new information. I know that because I've tutored middle school students who couldn't read and couldn't do basic math because of the traumatic environments from which they came. The work of the Children and Families Commission mitigates and prevents the damage done to these children. Funding for these programs puts people in the lives of traumatized children to help them get to a place where they can learn and can succeed. In Marion County, the local commission is launching two major new initiatives to work strategically with the local public school system so that their work complements each other. We're talking about funding for Great Start, juvenile crime prevention, relief nurseries, CASA, Healthy Start, runaway and homeless youth. Increasing the investment in the children and family system. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marion County has been a leader in this whole area. I appreciate your efforts there very much.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee, thank you very much for hosting these hearings and thank you for hearing our comments. My name is Rivka Weinsteiger and I'm the outreach coordinator for First Alternative Natural Foods Cooperative. I coordinate Chefs in the Classroom, a program that is offered at no cost to local public schools, a program that teaches kids the importance of eating well and eating whole food. The program prioritizes food that is grown by local farms and the students make all the meals themselves. We have not been able to meet the growing demand for this program for the last 3 years. If funded, House Bills 3476, 3307, and 3185 will supplement community efforts like mine to reconnect children with whole, real, and nutritious foods. Many students I have worked with cannot recognize fresh spinach and are surprised that they enjoy eating it.
Farm to School encompasses many types of programs like Chefs in the Classroom, as well as school experiences such as planting and tending school gardens, educating children about nutrition, and, of course, purchasing fresh, locally grown farm products. Restoring the connections between students to food, food to farms, and farms to institutions is necessary focus for the enhancement of Oregon citizens, our students, and our future. Let's give them our best. We're here to ask that you fund these House bills. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Nice job.
Co-chairs and member of the committee, my name is Sue Mackey. I'm here to ask for your support for House Bill 5031 that increases the subsidy rates for child care providers to the 75th percentile. I'm a child care provider from Salem, and I've been doing child care in my home for 12 years. When I started doing child care, I set my rates on the lower end of the scale. Over the years, I had watched my girlfriend struggle to find quality care that was affordable. I wanted to keep my rate similar to the state's so that every parent who wanted to come to my daycare could afford to. When year after year the state's rate stayed the same, I finally had to start raising my rates. I worried about the parents I had that were getting assistance. As I raised my rates, would I keep those clients and would I get others? Those parents would have to pay their co-pay amount and the difference that the state wouldn't pay. I did lose some of those, and some stayed, and I've had other subsidized clients since. All these years later, I'm still on the lower end of the scale when it comes to rates. I still want to keep my rates so that the average parent can afford good quality care, and so those who are subsidized can come to me too. I love what I do, that's why I do it, but I'm a single person who tries to support myself with this job. I struggle every day to pay my bills and make a living. I get calls every couple of days from people wanting childcare. They ask me, do you take DHS? When I tell them that I do, but that my rates are $100 more than what the state pays, most of the time the call ends there. So there is my problem. Do I take AFS kids and take a cut in my pay when I'm already struggling, or do I hope that I can fill that spot with a cash-paying customer? I believe that every child deserves to have the best care available to them. With the rates as low as they are, many professional providers won't take subsidized children, not because they don't want to, but because they can't afford to. So what does that leave for those parents? A child care setting that's not the best that is available to them. I'm asking you to support the governor's budget to raise the subsidies to the 75th percentile for me as a child care provider and for the children of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Good job. Thank you for what you do. Senator.
Hello. It's good to see you all again. I'm Cliff Trowe, former state senator. Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader, it's great that you're here spending the last part of a long day in Corvallis, and we appreciate that very much. I've been sitting next to a group of students over here who say they're interested in funding universities and community colleges, and I agree with them. I'm interested in that, too, and we're glad that the Oregon Student Association is here to make that point. One of the reasons that I say that, and I think we need to do even a better job than we're now doing. I'm impressed with the co-chair's budget. I'm impressed with what you've done, and I think this is a great session, and you're off to a good start. I wish you could do more because you need, in addition to take care of inflation, which you've done, and to give each budget more, which you've done, you need also to make up for a long time of disinvestment in higher education. We're now ranked 45th in the United States in higher education. That's not good, obviously. And also, what you see is that although we're interested in student access, and you've done some good things in student access, the Opportunity Grant and what you're doing to extend that, that's great. But in addition to that, the money going to the universities really has decreased in terms of the amount per student. And that's something that can be taken care of. Also, we want to provide for these students the best and the brightest of professors. And so we need to make sure that we have plenty of money to make sure that we go out and get good instructors and have good programs. That's all I want to say. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you, sir. get Jason Carlisle up, a couple of the Western Oregon students, and Cindy Bond, please. Then we'll have, we'll get probably three more, and then we'll have Roberta Beaker on deck, Millie Hermans, and Mike Volpe, please.
Thank you very much for being here and hanging in with us. And my name is Cindy Bond, and I'm the Early Childhood Supervisor at Old Mill Center for Children and Families. I would like to suggest to you that while intervention in the early elementary years is indeed laudable, it's not enough. For early intervention to be truly effective and cost efficient, we have to begin at the earliest possible time. As an early childhood educator for the past 20 years, I've had the privilege to observe on a daily basis the successes of children and families who have received early intervention. And this evening, I would ask of you to support the governor's budget in funding such programs as Healthy Start and Relief Nurseries through the Commission on Children and Families at the level that he is suggesting. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Cindy.
Good evening, co-chairs and members of the committee. Thank you, and it's an honor to appear before you this evening. My name is Jason Carlisle. I'm the district attorney in Linn County, Oregon, and have been since 1988. During those sometimes long years, I've learned one lesson well, and that is the components of the criminal justice system must be kept in balance, or the public suffers because the public will be endangered. The governor's recommended budget provided across-the-board increases in proportion that pushed us toward balance that we've been missing. Unfortunately, the co-chair's recommended budget goes the other direction. I think it pushes us out of balance. Let me illustrate that in a couple of ways. Compared to the governor's recommended budget, the co-chair's budget reduces corrections, reduces OIA, reduces Department of Justice, reduces DAs, reduces the judicial branch, but keeps the public defenders at the same level where they were as recommended by the budget. I had a little conversation before a committee meeting the other day with the head of the Lane County Public Defender, and he told me, Jason, good news. I'm going to have plenty of money to hire the people I have. He says, but I'm in a weird spot. There won't be any prosecutors to prosecute the cases, so I won't need them. That's an example of a system out of balance. In relation to district attorneys specifically, prior to 1971, the state funded the DA function completely. In 1971, the state and the counties got together and decided to share it. And as late as 1999, in addition to DA salaries, the state provided $2 million towards the prosecution function. Now, under the co-chair's budget, even that is gone. The only thing left is the DA's salaries. There's no contribution to the prosecution function. Must be a long day. At all. I urge you to return to balance. Return to the governor's recommended budget, specifically in relation to the DAs and in general towards the criminal justice system. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Tiffany McCoy, and I'm a student at Western Oregon University. I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon Student Association. Currently, Oregon ranks 46th in the nation in funding per university student. Tuition has increased approximately 50% in the last 5 years. This proposed budget only reinforces this trend and continues to price students out of education. We are in a crisis situation. Regional support has been reduced from the proposed $9 million to $2 million. $2 million for four regional universities will not go very far. How will the regional universities survive this budget? Southern Oregon University alone cut $4 million from its budget just this year. It has eliminated three majors from its curriculum. This is unacceptable. Students are paying more and getting less. Services and programs which benefit students are always cut first. The faculty is also hurt by this. In the social science department at my university last year, three promising young faculty members left for higher wages elsewhere. Last summer, due to the budget constraints, the administration began cutting vital classes from students. One of my professors, who was slated to teach three classes, two of them were cut by the administration. He ended up teaching those for free. We are on the verge of retiring a large workforce. We must have an educated citizenry to take their place. Please invest in your future. Underfunded schools do not perform well. Therefore, I strongly urge you to reconsider the higher education budget and fully fund the proposed $9 million for regional university support. Thank you.
Good job.
My name is Estelle Forto. I'm also a student at WOU. I'm here today to talk about the faculty cuts, or supposed faculty cuts. I don't think that we realize how deep this runs, but as it is, on my very first day returning to the term, this term, I went in my first class and I found four people in my class that had had to change their majors because of the TPD, that's the Teacher Preparedness for Deaf Education program, has been on hold. The reason that's been put on hold is because we're looking for someone to staff that, or a faculty member to help staff that. That has been put on hold indefinitely until we find that staffing member. If we cannot afford to attract talented faculty to staff these programs, then the programs just die. And what happens is, you know, I'm very proud to go to a school that's committed to producing educated and talented educators for our state. And if we forget about the importance of the deaf education, then I think we're really doing a huge disservice to the community that we serve here. So that's really basically all I have to say, and I'll give my mic to you.
Very good.
Thank you. My name is Sam Summers, and I'm a student at Western Oregon University, and I am a veteran of 6 years in the United States Navy. 87% of jobs, new jobs in Oregon in the next decade, that's by the end of this next 3 years, will require a college education. That's not 10 years, that's 3 years. Our universities are not competitive when it comes to teachers' salaries. Each year, better-funded schools entice well-qualified staff away. One of my favorite professors, Mark Moritz, left for Ohio State University because of this. Adjuncts are underpaid. Their lifestyle and health care suffers. I know adjuncts that cannot afford health care. They're thinking about taking on second jobs. That threatens our education. The shortage of funds limits teachers, which in turn limits programs. I am in school for an extra year. I'm a senior, and I'm going to be attending a fifth year because I have a scheduling conflict because we do not have enough teachers with enough time to get me out in four. Oregon universities need more money to provide adequate salaries for full and part-time staff. This will increase the quality of the education students receive and will ensure a better future for Oregon.
Thank you very much. And to bring us home, be Ms. Beaker, Ms. Hermans, and Mr. Volpe. Robert Becker. I apologize for that, sir. Jeez, it's been a long night, sir. I apologize. You're quick at this hour. I'm not so quick.
Mike Herman's not Millie.
I'm sorry, Mike Herman. I'm doing real good. Jeez. Please, go ahead.
Get one more.
Thank you, Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and committee members. My name is Mike Hermans. I'm here representing Oxford Houses of Oregon and Oregon Recovery Homes. A portion of Policy Option Package 101-7 of the Governor's recommended budget proposes providing funding for three Oregon Recovery Homes outreach coordinators to travel throughout Oregon over a two-year period and open at least 14 recovery homes that would be accessible for TANF recipients recovering from addiction and rebuilding relationships with their children and families. This proposal also includes a provision of other services, including training, leadership development, mentoring, and recovery support services. These homes remain operational for approximately 10 years each, stretching the proposed cost of funding the establishment of these homes to a mere $1.40 a day per bed. That's right, $1.40 a day per bed, over 10 years serving over 1,000 people, a small price to pay for a resource that saves so many lives. The outreach coordinators also develop sustainable community volunteer efforts that support these homes and add a priceless commodity to the value of this package for years to come. One paid staff works with hundreds of volunteers, and that's the kind of bang for the buck investment the state should make. We also feel the state should prioritize funding according to the lives that may be saved. Some of these issues are literally life and death. This is a sound investment in both the communities and the lives of Oregonians throughout the state. It is a public health and safety issue that cannot be ignored. With 212 documented drug-related deaths in Oregon in 2006, the burdens of foster care and the methamphetamine epidemic on the rise, this small investment may be the most cost-effective, life-saving, far-reaching proposal in the governor's budget. On a personal note, I am a miracle. I am a result of this system. I was a drug addict for 33 years until I was admitted into the Oxford home system. I've been clean for 8 years, 5 months, and 6 days now. I urge you to resubmit this to the budget. Thank you.
Great.
My name is Bob Becker. I live at 3406 Northwest Polk Avenue in Corvallis, and I'm here to ask for support for the tobacco prevention and education program. That means a cigarette tax, House Bill 2201. And thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. The problem is that tobacco use is the single most preventable cause of death and disease in Oregon. Each day, the tobacco industry spends over $445,000 marketing their products, and 20 of our kids gets hooked on tobacco, and about one-third of them will die of a smoking-related illness. The solution, that's the problem. The solution is a program where you educate people, you prevent kids from starting smoking, you try to get those who smoke to quit. I've been there. I suspect some of you have done that also. It's a tough addiction. And then finally, handle the secondhand smoke problem, which is a very serious one. I would not have believed it would be serious, but it really is. The data is all there. The Centers for Disease Control state that Oregon should be spending a minimum of $42 million per biennium to address this problem. We're doing far less. From 96 until last year, there were 143,000 people quit smoking in the state of Oregon with the program. In 2003, the program funds were cut, and the rate of diminishing of smokers was cut in half also. So I'll just sum up by saying we're going to pay for smoking-related illnesses unless we prevent them. You have the power to invest in tobacco prevention, saving lives, saving dollars in Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you very much. Before we go, with the committee's indulgence, there's one other legendary legislator in the building from this community. I'd like to come up, and especially since he was a previous co-chair of Ways and Means, help Representative Nolan and myself. If Mr. Van Vliet would please come forward and tell us how we're solving our problem here tonight. Yes, sir. I'd actually, I think the community would probably want you up here, Mr. Van Vliet.
Hello, Tony. Well, thank you, first of all, for coming to Corvallis, both co-chairs and the committee. It's the end of a long day for you, and I appreciate you being here. The only thing I was here tonight as a citizen on talking, since I'm going to talk about higher education budget on April 24th, was to come before you as a member of the state, former member of the statewides. I served 7 years as a extension specialist and also in the Forest Products Laboratory, and also found the tremendous contribution that the statewides make to the economy of the state of Oregon. So there, you've heard some marvelous testimony tonight. I really can't add any more to what you've already heard. But I can also tell you that from 1991, if you look at the budgets, you will see a continuous downhill trend. The one thing that you do not see very often is you see the inflationary factor taken out, but you do not see the actual amount of population increase often coupled together with the inflation factor to see where we really are in the state of Oregon. It has been an overall tragedy to this state to come here and start serving in the legislature in 1975 with Cliff Trow and to have the dream that Oregon was going to be continuously a progressive state, along with the bottle bill and all the other things that we were going to do and have done under some very progressive leadership, only to see us fall behind drastically since ballot measure 5, and that our dream about what Oregon should be deteriorated drastically after that period of time. The dream that you and I have is not the dream that Mr. McIntyre had for the state of Oregon. And let me tell you, you have a wonderful opportunity right now to correct that, and that is not only create a long-term solution to the budget problem, but take some action on the short term and get these budgets back up to where they should be. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Well, I'd like to thank everyone that came tonight. I'd like to thank the Senate President who came. I'd like to thank the representatives and senator from this district and my full Ways and Means Committee and my co-chair spending the long hours. And we really appreciate the testimony. It's helped a lot. Thank you all very, very much. Thank you.